Now in studio, just walked in. Who just walked in? We have the gentleman himself, Mr. Sakir Shangala, the Minister of Justice. Thank you so much. I know that you had cabinet with the Prime Minister, and I know that you have a hectic schedule, but you rushed here. So we are pleased to have you in studio.
Thank you. Always a busy day.
Yes, Mr. Shangala. As we discussed previously, before we agreed on the interview, the Justice Ministry, tell us.
Well, justice is central to the Republic of Namibia. As you know, the coat of arms has three words inscribed in it: unity, liberty, and justice. So it's a very important ministry. We're busy with a lot of things. We are busy with laws. Particularly, my involvement is in policy setting. We work with the Law Reform Commission. We work with the Ombudsman. We work with the courts. So our job is to coordinate all of those things. But for interest of the public to know, we also deal with issues relating to maintenance. So maintenance is collected at the courts. Recently, we have tried to appoint maintenance officers. We have 5 positions still vacant. So if there are young people with grade 12 and some experience, or those who feel that they have a degree that qualifies them to do maintenance office work, please contact the personnel office. We've also put legal drafters in the ministry that draft laws for the Republic and then relate with the parliament. We've placed law officers across the country who provide legal aid, and legal aid itself, which is a very, it's one of our most direct interactions with the public, which allows people to pay for legal costs with private lawyers, as long as you're approved. And we also have lawyers that we place at the courts. We've placed 16 across the country now. And hopefully, as positions become funded, we'll be able to place more and more. So there's quite a lot of things that we're doing.
Yeah.
Community courts that relate to the traditional authorities, we function with them. And the master's office, I'm proud to say, the master's office is now online. You can do quite a lot of things online, and it will become increasingly online.
Yeah.
The courts are already online. You file your documents online. And if you have currently you need the case number to search. Soon you'll just need the name of the party and you'll be able to search anything on
that. That would also assist us journalists a lot in doing our work.
Indeed.
Okay. Now, we know that there has always been a bit of a complaint when it comes to the Justice Ministry, especially when it comes to a backlog in cases and also just bottlenecks. What is the issue?
First, why are people concerned about is that people are now litigating.
Mm.
So more and more people are litigating. And as they're litigating, the court role is becoming full. But what do I mean by the court role? This is the allocation of cases to a court. And we only have, so for every court, look, we need a lot of people. You need a magistrate or a judge. You need a prosecutor. You need a defense attorney. Sometimes it's a state defense attorney. So legal aid people. Then you need a court clerk, court orderly. You need an interpreter in an empty court for these people to operate in. So sometimes you don't have court space. Sometimes you don't have court staff. That impacts. And because of the position in the economy finds itself, we had to consider attrition. So when a clerk goes on maternity leave, we don't fill the position. We just use somebody else who's already doing their work. So it slows work down. But sometimes the backlog is also because lawyers are unavailable. Lawyers tell you, I'll take your case and his case. And then when your case comes, sends a junior, postpone, I'm going to the other one because maybe yours is more important or you're paying more money. I don't know.
So is it that we don't have capacity in the fraternity or what?
Capacity is one thing, but also because lawyers can manipulate the court schedule. But also because sometimes police has not done investigation. Investigation is not done. Or the accused does not appear. There are a lot of people who get arrested, pay bail money, are out on bail, and they don't appear. then we have to go look for them and then arrest them. And then at the end of the day, also come back and apply for the bail to be refunded. I've taken a position where if you've been unduly or if you've been unduly absent, your unwarranted absence will cost you now when you come to pay to apply for your bail money back. Because if you're acquitted, you go and pick up your money.
Yeah.
Sometimes you go through trial and then you're acquitted, your bail money's. You want to pick up your bail money, I'll say, maybe I'll take off. Because the time that we convene court, drive, you know, look, let me give you an example. On Ndangwa, magistrate's court gets cases that come from Amuthia, and the witness is brought in. We pay for the witnesses as well. And then you, the accused, don't pitch. You need to be there so you can cross-examine your the witness.
Mm.
And then we have to go find you, and then you come back to court. You give an excuse. I forgot. Genuine.
Yeah.
You're forgiven. For that court sitting, you're going to pay as well.
Mm. So it seems that there's a whole chain, and there's a whole process is the one that leads up to this whole delay and the whole
Of reasons.
Yeah, but then what is the ministry doing about it? What is it? Because obviously, it's a number of these things are age-old practices. What is it? And I know that
Some of them we can solve.
Yes.
Some of them we cannot solve.
Mm.
So what the Chief Justice has been able to do is put up a criminal justice forum.
Yeah.
Of practitioners, magistrates, judges, government people, administrators, so we can see how we can resolve some of the issues that are state-related or that we can control with the lawyers.
Mm.
The others we can't control. So we have to find a way where we're honest with each other and say, okay, the criminal justice system is slow. We're going to make it this fast. Look, already the e-justice system, the e-filing has made it fast. The mandatory mediation that the High Court has brought in has made it fast because, you know, some cases don't even reach the court date anymore. They're sorted out. Then, because we have more and more courts being built, we're also putting prefab buildings. So when you have overcapacity, you can deal with more and more cases.
Yeah.
But the more the cases, the more the manpower you need, the more man hours you need in the court. And so sometimes it's a vicious circle. Some of the things you can sort, some of the things you cannot sort.
Yeah. Now you've been the Minister of Justice for just over a year.
Yeah,
just over a year.
Yeah.
And when you first stepped into office and now being there for a year, is it what you anticipated when you got it? Because you came from the Attorney General's office. Is it what you anticipated? Is it more challenging?
Well, I've been in the justice sector since I left the Prime Minister's office in 2001. And the Attorney General's office was then an integral part of the Ministry of Justice, although constitutionally it's a separate office. So we know everybody, everybody knows everybody. So we've worked in this sector for a while, and you get to understand sometimes what makes things work and what doesn't make things work. Sometimes you also develop biases. So when I came to the ministry, I had certain biases. And one of my bias that I had was that the machine needs to go faster. There's just no excuse why we can't pay out bail monies, why we can't pay out witness fees, why we can't do certain things faster. And where there were no courtrooms, we had to do something, like bringing a proposal for prefab structures so that we don't need to wait for the brick and mortar that'll take a long time with National Planning Commission, Ministry of Works, etc. You can bypass that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the innovations that we're making are also, since I came in, is to say, look, some of the things we can do in a specialized court, like the traffic court. And soon what I would like to see are night courts and weekend courts so that we can really work on the backlog. I think these things are doable. We need to find people that are willing to spend time, particularly retired magistrates that just, don't want to stay home. They can come and man the courts, the weekend court.
Yeah.
And we can have a special juvenile court, for example, to deal with young kids or young offenders.
Yeah.
Not the very, very young, not the young victims, but young offenders,
yeah.
So that we can divert them into community service. This is an area that I am now, I've addressed a letter to the Chief Justice to say, look, we cannot just have people going to court. And he's agreed. And he's put it before the Criminal Justice Forum to say, we have now got to instruct magistrates and judges to say, well, we do not need to put people behind the bar. We do not need to put people behind the bar. There are reasons why people are punished. Retributive measures, corrective measures. So you can also tell the other people that what you do can get you into trouble. But the reality is, prisons are not the only way. We have, if you're a teacher and you get convicted on drunken driving and you can spend hours after work tutoring young kids from disadvantaged or marginalized, you know, backgrounds, why shouldn't you? It's a benefit to people. You get to serve your society and the scales of justice will be restored. Yeah. I think there's a number of things that we can do and become innovative.
But how realistic is this? How realistic is this? And how far are we from implementing this?
It's been happening and it's been happening sporadically. That's what I don't want. I want it to be a mainstay thing. It's in the Criminal Procedure Act, so it ought to happen regularly. Yeah. So 50% of the cases should even go to, you know, community service. Mm. The difficulty hasn't been the want of the judicial officers. It's been our society. Parents are saying, we don't want this kid. Take the kid. Then the kid has to be put in custodial detention in the prison system.
Yeah.
And then what happens there? They meet the professors of crime there and then they become hardened criminals. But it's been society. Or maybe it's been society genuinely saying, look, we can't keep the kid and promise to bring the kid to town. We live in a rural area. We don't have a car at home. So please do something. Those are the real challenges that we're experiencing.
Yeah. Now, you speak of the professors of crime and you speak of the magistrates. You speak of the judicial officials and so on. And we know that in the past few maybe years, not even years, but maybe the past 2 or 3 years, there has been a number of judicial officials who have found themselves on the other side of the law. Magistrates, we've been reading about magistrates taking bribes, magistrates or prosecutors also taking bribes or charging people money and then or asking people to pay for it. What's going on?
Yes, that is unfortunate, but part of it has also been our fault. Look, when you pay peanuts, you get monkeys. And when you pay peanuts, you force people who are of a prominent position in society. A magistrate is a very important person in the community. So is the prosecutor. And then imagine if you pay them a salary, they can't even buy a car. So they get tempted. So we've increased the benefits and remuneration levels of magistrates. Recently, they've also asked for another increment. I have refused to do that because I think we have all to pain and sweat in the economy that we are in. But we have improved their conditions of service to a level that every magistrate can buy a car, even if it's a donkey Botswana. Every prosecutor can buy a car, even if it's a donkey Botswana. But I mean, the benefits that they have, though, housing, prosecutors and the medical aid are good. We made a mistake where we took away the benefit for housing for magistrates, and I would like to restore that because the magistrate that cannot afford a house will also be tempted sometimes to
But is that an excuse enough?
It's not an excuse, but what I'm saying is if you sit with a position of power and authority and you're not remunerated in a dignified manner to at least buy a vehicle to get you to and from work or to at least, you know, buy an abode, then or rent a house, It may be a trigger to people putting their hands where they shouldn't put their hands in terms of leaning into public funds or committing offenses. That being said, though, criminals are criminals. And when you commit a crime, whether you're a minister, whether you're a president, whether you're a judge, whether you're the Chief Justice himself or the PG himself, herself, you will be subject to the law
yeah.
within the confines of what the law permits. And those who have been convicted are only a sign that our system works. No one is above the law, and you will be held accountable. And once you have served your sentence, we then see whether this offense is one that can no longer permit you to serve in that capacity, but you may be useful elsewhere. You could be, for example, a legal drafter. You could be a legal aid tutor or legal aid counsel that, for example, works with those who need to get their hours to complete so that they become lawyers.
Yeah.
Whichever way, we'll see how we can utilize you or not utilize you. I mean, some crimes are so bad that in this profession, you may never come back.
Yeah.
But we've seen even in private practice where private practitioners have committed offenses and they've restored their lives and they're back.
Yeah.
So it's not a one-way street. We're all humans. We regret where that has happened. We hope it doesn't happen. There's a code of conduct, even for judges. And recently, a judge was held not to have recused himself, senior person, and was chastised by his colleagues. And sometimes that chastisement, that judgment sitting there is enough to even be a blemish on your career that nothing else needs to be done, perhaps.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm just saying there are many ways to skin a cat and many ways to deal with those who transgress the law.
Yeah. And let me just take it back again. You kept to the issue of capacity. If we also have again another issue where you sit with graduates who don't have jobs, but then you sit again with, there's not enough capacity when it comes to human resource. How is it that there's a want here, there's a need here, and these two don't talk to each other?
And then there's going to be overcapacity being produced by the university, but I don't have courtrooms to put the people in. So, for example, if the High Court can be finished, we'll get on with our lives. But it's been contractors who've been able to complete, and that's held us up for a while. It's been a blemish on the, you know, beautiful eye and view of Windhoek, and I'm sorry for that, but it's been caused by contractors.
When is it going to be finished now?
I don't have the exact date, yes, but we hope that within a year from there, getting onto site, and I think they're on site now already,
yeah,
that they will be done.
Mm.
It will allow prosecutors, judges to have more rooms from which they can operate as chambers. Courthouses are not going to increase that much. It was really their offices. But we also make provision for some rooms for prosecutors. The reality is we need an office for the prosecutor general. We need an office for the attorney general. We need a modern office for the Ministry of Justice to house our component divisions. Right now we have law reform there, somewhere else, and other departments somewhere else, like community courts, and we're paying rent, and it's not feasible in the long run.
And you're speaking about law reform, and I know that you've also served at the Law Reform Commission for a number of years.
Served my best life there, best days there.
Okay, good to know. Tell me, where are we as a country? Because I know that there's a lot, apart from us growing, apart from the world moving in a different direction, where are we as Namibia when it comes to law reform, especially because we are governed by a number of old age laws that we adopted from
I don't have South the Africa. Exact numbers now, but I'm going to give you rough estimates.
Yeah.
It's close to 550 legislation from apartheid still on the law books.
Sure. That's a lot.
And 550 new ones since independence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not every law is bad because it's old.
Yeah.
Okay? I keep saying this. Oldest law in the country is don't kill.
Yeah.
Comes from biblical times. It's the oldest. It's not bad. We still have it. We're going to keep it because we want to preserve life.
Yeah.
So, in terms of law reform, we haven't done bad. We've done over close to 20-something reports. Important work has been done. Important work continues to be done. And the work of the law reform has led to a number of legislation being repealed because they are obsolete or they are wrong. They're just repugnant to the mores, the social order of today.
Mm.
Law reform is not a function for law reform alone. It is for those sectors that are administering laws to also identify laws and also initiate reform. It is also collectively an issue that I call is cyclical. There are times where you create new laws and there are times to reform those laws. It's an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
But it's also very pivotal because of our history that we had to come from where we're coming to where we are, that we needed to reform, change, bring about a new juridical jurisprudence so that we can have a new ethos in terms of our thinking. So it's important. It'll continue to be important. And you see their role, even with NIEF, that they're continuing to probe, draft, provide, versions that are workable. Mm. And it's a continuous process. So law reform is a critical aspect of a developing society and a continual existing society.
Yeah. And since we're speaking about law reform, we know that you've rendered your thoughts audible on the whole marijuana legalization or decriminalization of the use of marijuana. And you've been rather vocal about your views on it. And then there are those who are saying that how can we be talking about marijuana it should not be legalized if there's a $1 billion industry out there.
Look,
maybe you can just give a bit of a background to our listeners on what your views are.
I never gave you my views. I just told you what the law is. The law says this amount possession is unlawful. And I gave you a look at what the courts have been saying. Courts are also part of the process of law reform.
Yes.
They may change things. They change how we penalize partners in a marriage if they're divorcing. And we're moving on now and bringing a new law on divorce because of their findings.
Yeah.
But what I said was that possession is still unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, we do not have any application for the utilization of marijuana being smoked as medicinal. Only one trial was done around the world. It is ingested, I know. It is refined and a hemp is utilized. What you need to do is apply in terms of the relevant laws so that that medicine or product of that plant is medicine and regulated by the medical council.
Yeah.
The Registrar of Medicines.
Mm-hmm.
And hitherto, we have not received any application for somebody who wants to produce it for export. So I don't know what the hullabaloo is. Only people that want to use it are the folks that want to smoke it and get high. And I've also said that what the Ministry of Health is telling me is that we don't have enough people trained to deal with the side effects of the smoking of cannabis.
Yeah. But now, do you think that we, because there's a conversation that we are missing out on a $1 billion industry globally. What are you saying about that?
The production of medical marijuana or just leisure
medicinal marijuana.
Yeah, that's what I said.
And cosmetic and clothing, everything.
The Registrar of Medicines will be obtainable through the Medical Council. Go and register your product there. It's not for the Minister of Justice. The Minister of Justice, with me, lies the offense. I deal with the offense. If tomorrow you tell me that you're producing marijuana for medicine, fine and well. What does this have to do with me? Nothing. You know, but if I find you in possession of cannabis for smoking, not me, the cops, they will utilize the law and punish you. So if you want to tell me that I'm discriminating people from their lawful, for their want to be high, I mean, I'm sorry. You see, the question is really, should we as lawmakers make laws and maintain laws to protect people against themselves? Should we or should we not? Should we just say, okay, you know what? The roads are, you know, all no holds barred. You've got a Lamborghini, a Florid 320. You've got a Datsun Florid 80 kilometers per hour. Or do we say these are the parameters to use the road? Until such time that the health authorities are in a capacity to deal with the side effects of marijuana. Because why is nobody talking about the side effects of marijuana?
Mm-hmm.
It's as if marijuana is a plant that has no side effects whatsoever. No side effects whatsoever. Not even the smoke ingested into lungs will cause lung cancer or throat cancer. If that were the case, that this is the one plant of all the plants in the world that has no side effects, then wow, we would have known. I don't know it.
Yeah.
And they do say educated person must know a little bit of everything and everything of something. I don't know a little bit of that at all. All
and you
I
deem
know,
yourself an educated person.
I'm certified as an educated person. But I have never come across any person telling me, any doctor, even the ones that called me after this whole story broke, that cannabis has no side effect.
Yeah, yeah.
Not true. It has side effects. Psychosis and all those other are side effects. We do not have enough people to deal with the side effects of marijuana. We have mental health problems. We're in denial of them in this country. People are resorting to alcohol to deal with their mental health problems. We're a post-traumatic society. As it is, now we must add the other one. I don't know. But if you want to convince Parliament or the President and, you know, what is this? This poll, what is this election? Referendum is done.
Mm.
And it says, you know, the law must be amended. I will gladly bring it to the floor of Parliament.
Okay. And
I didn't make this law, by the way. I found it here. So,
since we're talking about that, and since we're talking about how this would more this benefit the Namibian nation, what about there's also been there's also been a lot of questions regarding the prostitution law, for example, where some people say that not only the issue that the crime is living off the proceeds of prostitution, but that it's happening anyway, and that the law would rather protect the prostitutes than do anything else. What is your view on that?
My view is published. My thesis for my LLB is the legalization of the profession of commercial sex workers.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, these are people that are currently plying their trade. It's the oldest trade, by the way, in the world. And the state is not benefiting from the proceeds of their conduct. We can tax them. We can protect them. We can instill standards. We can have tourism around it. Maybe there are those who come around the world who are looking for, you know, to sample the, you know, black product. I don't know. But it's something that can be legalized, and I'm for it. The same with abortion. The same with abortion. Abortion is dealt with under the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Justice together.
Mm.
The crime sits with me. I'm with the view that already when Minister Aufiku was the Minister of
Health.
Dr. Aufiku mm-hmm. was the Minister of Health, I've written to him. I said, my man, let's call for a referendum on abortion, because kids are making kids. It's not going to stop kids from making kids. They're going to make kids, but they're dumping the kids.
Mm.
And we see bodies and body parts being, you know, kids are being put in pit latrines. I thought it was just in town. Now in the villages too. So I believe it's time we moved on.
Yeah.
I'm not that regressive. I just don't believe that you want to get high is the way to go forward.
Yeah. But how far, so since you're saying that you're pro, you're for pro-choice.
Yeah.
And you're for.
It's a woman's choice.
Yeah. And you're for, if the person wants to, the sex trade. But how far are we? Because you are the justice minister. Tell us then how far is this? How realistic is this for us?
Well, as I said, abortion needs to be dealt with through health primarily. I deal with the legal consequence of the decision. Oh, we can now, you know, have abortion. Abortion you can have in Namibia on four conditions.
Yes.
Your life is in danger as a woman. You've probably been raped.
Yes.
Kids' life is in danger.
Yeah.
For medical reasons, etc. It's not that it's not allowed. It's just we don't have it permissible as a family planning.
Yes, it's the family planning that the
that's
family
the aspect
question.
That needs in the, yes. Therefore health on commercial sex work. You know, I'm starting with on the website to be putting polls out there, and if you interact with us and you say commercial sex work should be allowed, I will readily make a cabinet submission to say guys, can I bring on the floor of parliament a law that abolishes, you know, the criminalization of commercial sex work? And we regulate it.
Yeah, and then just because there's the question. It says the law says living off the proceeds of prostitution. So now if I'm a prostitute and I don't buy bread or anything, I give that money to my children. How then do you come arrest me? Is there also not a problem with that part of the with the law itself there?
Well, look, modern day prostitution is also happening in our universities where, you know, students have sugar daddies and
it's sugar daddy. Is that prostitution?
Well, I mean, all I'm saying is let's liberalize this. How do you regulate? Even sodomy, consenting men.
Yeah.
How do you, you know, it's between two people. Anyway, how do you get in without violating their freedom, their right to privacy? So as far as I'm concerned, we've just got to be, we got to move on. Yes, I know. My father's a bishop. I know a lot of people who are religious. They're like, my goodness, the apple has fallen far from the tree. I am not giving my personal views. I'm giving views around the work that I do.
Yeah, let me have you on record.
Find me at the bar with the whiskey and I'll give you my views. But I'm giving you the views of the Minister of Justice, yes, and the ministry right now.
Yeah, but you said that those in the relationship with sugar daddies, that's also...
I'm saying we are experiencing complaints where somebody says, I dated this girl all along. I'm driving a taxi. I'm older than her. Moment she graduated, she left me. And you people mustn't say we mustn't go cut them up and chop them up. So I came to make a complaint. And I'm like, dude, did you give lovingly? Did you give willingly? Okay, now what now? You know, so you look at it from his lens or her lens or the other lens. It could be that this person as a product and he was buying, or I don't know. But, you know, it's a thin line. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get you. There was no way. It's 1 hour 49 minutes that we've been having. We wish we could have you for a full hour, but we know that you had other duties. But then there was no way we can have you in studio and not talk about the recent story that was in the media regarding the payment of money into employees' accounts at the Justice Ministry. What happened?
I do not know what happened. Mm. I'll tell you why I do not know what happened. As a minister, I don't deal with payments. I don't deal with admin issues. Even at the AG's office, when I engage lawyers, I don't deal with their payments unless they come back to me and say, I'm not being paid. So I don't know.
There's investigations going on and you're asking questions.
My friend, I'm not an investigator. I'm appointed as a minister of justice. The ACC is the investigator.
Yeah.
He made a ruling.
Yeah.
So ask them. I don't know. I am a minister. And when letters are being written, only recently, because they saw that my face was in the paper for no reason at all, that I'm being copied in. But previously, I hadn't even had the decency of being copied in by the secretary to cabinet or by the executive director, you know. And what's even strange is, and I really believe that all of us should take a grip of ourselves and respect our institutions. When the ACC says, I haven't found anything wrong, we haven't found anything wrong. And this is a constitutional body. It needs to be respected. It's a body that needs to be given the support that it needs. And if you have an issue, you probably should substantiate it, but not just to go and cast aspersions. It's wrong.
Yeah.
It's wrong. I don't know anything, my friend.
Yeah.
I'm like you. I'm reading the papers. I'm having a ball at it as well.
Yeah. Then also, we're almost about to let you go. Listeners, you're listening to Eagle FM. The number in the studio is 083-2888-401. That's 083-2888-401.
But now, I will say this.
Yes, please.
I am concerned that we are quick to... You always jump to conclusions, as that article did.
Yeah.
An investigative body found that certain procedures were followed and has made its comments. I have not seen the report. I don't even need to see the report. Those that, you see, the Minister of Finance appoints accounting officers.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be a permanent secretary or executive director, as they're called now, but your accounting function is through the State Finance Act. The minister appoints you. So they have a relationship with that minister. Mm-hmm. All I have is a Section 11 of the Public Service Act relationship where I guide what happens in the ministry. Now, as far as
so it's wrong for people to feel that the buck stops with you, that you had to know
on what admin, was going on. On admin, finance, no.
Mm.
I present the budget. The buck stops with me, whether it's from the judiciary or from, but, well, you can blame me. It's like firing the coach when the players had 7 chances and then he was a bad coach.
Yeah, it's almost like an Arsenal team. Flop.
Don't get me started with that team. Broke my heart, that team. I've left it.
Yeah.
I'm with Real Madrid now.
No, you know, you need to go to Manchester United. Now, I also cannot let you go without asking you these questions, Honorable Shangala. There have been a number of comments regarding the young people, because there's been a call for young people to be in more leadership positions in
the
government.
Young
youth. The youth, yes, of Namibia, to be in leadership of, and then they say that, you are one of the people who have been put in leadership positions, but you've been accused of corruption. You've been accused of basically costing government a lot, and that you've been basically engaged in shady. What number one, are you aware of these comments?
I'm aware of these comments.
And what do you say to them?
They're regrettable because they've been made by young people against a young person without even that young person an opportunity. My value add to this republic, if you can quantify the deals that I've saved government money, is in the billions. I don't even want to go there. My value add is going to last even way after I'm gone in this lifetime. So they can take a chill pill for that. But I can tell you, people that have said that I'm corrupt, apparently I received 300 million from somewhere. They take these reports to the head of state. They take these reports to parliament, these false whistleblowers. And I've been investigated many a time. Why don't you just go to the, you know, prosecutor general, get a certificate to not annul a prosequi, prosecute me, and then I deal with you afterwards if you don't have the evidence.
So for those who are saying that,
why just taint people's names? Yeah. And it's easy to throw and make an allegation, difficult to defend yourself. And there are papers propagating this narrative. Apparently, even I don't deserve my qualifications. The university should take them back.
Yeah.
Some newspapers, I really, back in the day, the journalists, some of them used to sleep in our house. They were really vanguard.
Now they just did you become, mention a name there?
No, I didn't. Okay. I said some newspapers, they were vanguard, and today they're just trashy tabloids. It's regrettable. And it's when young people become leaders, you will say now, what happened when the elders were running them? I just think that we are our own worst enemies. Young people need to step up. We need to stop whining and complaining. People get into leadership because you spend time in the organization. I have established branches, structures. I went from structures at the bottom until I came to region, and from region into government positions. You don't just inject, you jump and you're in positions.
Yeah.
You have to walk the walk. So you understand the party life. And I'm talking about SWAPO now, which, by the way, I hope you young people listening will go and vote for. Have you registered, by the way? So we have to go to the structures, earn your keep, be a member, pay it up. It's $12 a year. But the money you spend on drinking the booze, you know, you want to drink Hennessy that is, you know, even beyond half of your salary, take away. This is the problem.
Yeah.
And when those people are in the meetings, then you say, oh, those people in government, whatever. You walk away, and this is how countries are destroyed. You walk away, and maybe you're the brainiest, and you leave the less brainy to do the work. And then when the less brainy democratically elect each other and democratically take decisions, and then you say they're messing up. They're not. You're messing up. You've abandoned. Come and stoke the fire. Put wood on the fire. When it's cold, we all get to benefit. But if you're a fence sitter, you know, you haven't found any fence you haven't sat on because you've got no opinion. I don't like politics. You know, if I find politics affects your life.
Yeah. a few minutes before 2 o'clock, and it's almost time. It's few minutes before we have to say goodbye. Honorable Shangala.
Oh, really? I was just getting warmed up.
If you had come earlier, then we'd have more time to talk. So for the listeners out there who are listening now, I'll ask you these two questions, which you will be now answering on the record. Mm. And just like you said, that there are those who are throwing allegations out there, and you say that you are aware of this. So this is your opportunity to now answer these questions, these two questions. Honorable Shangala, are you corrupt? And have you engaged in any corrupt activities throughout your any of your tenure in government?
I haven't.
Yeah.
Regrettably, I intimidate people perhaps with my brain and my verbosity. This is true. Then they say, I rah-rah. Yeah. Well, yes. Regrettably, I had to live the life that I lived. Want to wear my shoes? And at the level where I operate, I do have a brain, okay? I don't sit on my brain. I work. Everybody who knows me knows that 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, you'll be receiving emails. I'll be going through texts. So don't blame me if you're sitting on your brain. If you can do things with your brain and do so legally, do so legally. But don't come and blame people for doing things properly and then saying they're corrupt. It's because, you see, the problem is we've got village mentalities. We have to compete with the rest of the world. But because I'm the only one from the village who had a car, suddenly, if Dapua Shali has a car now from the village, she must have stolen it. You know, this is the problem we have. We are our own worst enemies. We have to compete with the rest of the world. Instead of us saying, look, let's put our heads together. We've now got a car. How do we bring now services here so that these people can also benefit? And then we leapfrog into the future. Young people should be discussing reform of the curricula so we can be doing calculus and algebra at another level. What are we talking about? Oh, Saki, Saki, Saki. He's driving this car. He's doing that car. But when they look at me, by the way, also, they think we're the same age. I'm 42. It took 20 years to get to where I am, colleague. It took a lot. When I started, I was 19, turning 20. And I was carrying the briefcase and doing the mundane work for the prime minister. And today I'm a minister of justice. Now you want to go say, oh, Saki, I know Saki. That is a bishop. How can he have this thing? My friend, if I had a policy that I had for 10 years, it would have paid out by now. 20 years, it would have paid out by now. While you was what? In primary school. So get with the program. You need to walk the walk and stop accusing people just because they're, stop being a PhD. Let's celebrate success. And where anybody, including a pauper on the street or a minister or a judge or a big businessman tries to do anything corrupt, we should shun it, but let's have the evidence. Let's be bold enough to say, I'm going to accuse you of this and I'm going to report you at the Corruption Commission. Let me have my day in court. But the reason we don't get there is because the evidence, how do I get, apparently a minister, a colleague of mine apparently got 30 million, was 3 million, and it was apparently in the duct of the house, and then it fell through the duct of the house. The guy who came to repair it. These are stories. In Namibia, we become story lorries. It's sickening, really. Let's move on.
Thank you so much, Honorable Shangala. That was your Justice Minister, Sakia Shangala, right here in the Eagle FM studios.